Blog Talk Radio.
Joe the plumber in Tent City, Mr. President, if I could ask you one simple question, is how could you make Timothy Guyton ahead of the Treasury?
You know what, never mind, I get it, you don't even have to say, you're just a spokesman, right? Same snake, new face,
ain't the Hope for Change campaign, seriously, that was clever, cause hope is just a word, and you're the best lie ever. That's 16 months and to start bringing him back, but you haven't even expanded, now you're trying to pass a draft, you said you cared about our families, but now it's clear to see that you don't give a fuck about us, all you care about is wealth, not peace, not dreams, certainly not me, but I don't see you as my chief. You're just a white-collar thief, another Tavistock production, trilateral connection, a Bilderberg commercial, and kissing just little messenger. I heard you with Kennedy, yes, I'm thinking more like Mussolini with your youth brigades and stars. Yeah, just call him how I see him and say, yes, we can, yes, we can, yes, we can. What? I just got one more question. Hey, Obama, where you taking?
He was a righteous man. The sort of people invite this man to make newer policies. The same laws they never will see. Just to support righteous men. Why did the people invite this man to make newer policies? Somebody help me please understand.
Yeah, a black man in a white place, yo, the Uncle Tom of my space, yeah. Yo, I'm glad I went and said it, I'll say it and I'll say it loud, yo, fuck the president. Ooh, no sucker boo, this silly cat's trying to rob you. Yo, say what you mean he trying to get us? An intelligent black man, I think you're jealous. Yo, sucker, please go do your research, the Big New and Kissinger were his teachers. Yo, why you gotta go and hate on a brother? You know that's what they want us to do to each other. Yo, true that, but the truth takes precedence. All anyone can really do is weigh the evidence. And if you can't see the Wall Street cronies claiming all the turf for themselves and they homies, then you about to get jacked for your home. When you out on the street and you can't get a loan, and catch you thinking, would you do it again? Give your vote to a black man just because he said he was a righteous man.
The sort of people invite this man to make newer policies. The same laws you never will see. Except to support righteous men. Why did the people invite this man to make newer policies? Somebody help me please understand.
No, you're not the righteous man, no, no. Oh, no, you're not the righteous man, no.
All right. Oh, here we are post 9/11. The day after. It's been an interesting day, to say the least. September 12, 2011, AD, Washington, D.C., the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun, Paul Krugman. What? Well, if it weren't so tragic, the man's words would be funny. Where do we start here? Paul Krugman. I'm going to go ahead and read what Krugman wrote. Huh. Here's what he wrote. It's titled Years of Shame, And in fact, shame is a good word for it. Paul Krugman writes, is it just me? Yes, it is. Or are the 9/11 commemorations oddly subdued? Actually, I don't think it's me. And it's not really that odd. He goes on to write, what happened after 9/11, and I think even people on the right know this, whether they admit it or not, was deeply shameful. The atrocity should have been a unifying event, but instead it became a wedge issue. Fake heroes like Bernie Kerik, Rudy Giuliani, and yes, George W. Bush raced to cash in on the horror. And then the attack was used to justify an unrelenting war the neocons wanted to fight, and for all the wrong reasons. A lot of other people behaved badly. How many other professional pundits, people who should have understood very well what was happening, took the easy way out, turning a blind eye on the corruption and lending their support to the hijacking of the atrocity? The memory of 9/11 has been irrevocably poisoned. It has become an occasion for shame. And in its heart, the nation knows it. I'm not going to allow any comments on this post for obvious reasons, he writes at the end. Shame? Obvious shame? Mr. Krugman, you should feel obvious shame. It's long been believed that you are unhinged based on a lot of the speaking engagements that you've been found to say obviously crazy things, like perhaps if space aliens were to come down from the heavens, that the nation's economy, the world's economies would be healed. A clip which we'll play in short order. Mr. Krugman took the opportunity to draw attention to himself by suggesting that all of these ceremonies where George Bush, Rudy Giuliani, and almost every other conservative is said to have cashed in, according to Mr. Krugman. George Bush, for a time, unified America. Rudy Giuliani handled the business of New York during the disaster and after. They are heroes. Both George Bush, Rudy Giuliani, the fireman, everyone. How, in fact, has George Bush cashed in on the tragedy, I'd like to know? He doesn't specify. How indeed did Rudy Giuliani cash in? They did what they were supposed to do. They did what they had to do after this tragedy. What were they supposed to do? I suppose Mr. Krugman, whom hardly anybody really knows his name. Well, I suppose now they do. Now we do. I think Mr. Krugman is a jealous, bitter old man who once won the Nobel Prize for his theory on Keynesian economics and other bizarrely socialist theories, economic theories, and otherwise. His three-sentence column is obviously shameful. It hits a new low. A new low for Mr. Krugman. What was he looking for? Was he looking for attention? And there are those who are calling for his firing. I have a clip for you where Paul Krugman is suggesting that space aliens should come down from the heavens to fix the U.S. economy. The words to that effect. Take a listen here. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. You call in number 347-884-8500.
Fareed Zakaria GPS, seen in Sunday morning 10 Eastern and Pacific.
Infrastructure spending, if it were well spent, that's great. I'm all for that. I'd borrow for that, assuming we're not paying Boston big dig kind of prices for the infrastructure.
But even if you were, wouldn't John Maynard Keynes say that if you could employ people to dig a ditch and then fill it up again, that's fine. They're being productively employed. They pay taxes. So maybe Boston's big dig was just fine after all.
Think about World War II, right? That was actually negative social product spending, and yet it brought us out. I mean, partly because you want to put these things together. If we say, look, we could use some inflation. Ken and I are both saying that, which is, of course, anathema to a lot of people in Washington, but is in fact what the basic logic says. It's very hard to get inflation in a depressed economy. But if you had a program of government spending plus an expansionary policy by the Fed, you could get that. So if you think about using all of these things together, you could accomplish, you know, a great deal. I mean, if we discovered that space aliens were planning to attack, and we needed a massive buildup to counter the space alien threat, and really inflation and budget deficits took secondary place to that, this slump would be over in 18 months. And then if we discovered, whoops, we made a mistake, there aren't actually any space aliens.
So we need Orson Welles, what you're saying.
No, there was a Twilight Zone episode like this in which scientists fake an alien threat in order to achieve world peace. Well, this time we don't need it. We need it in order to get some fiscal stimulus.
Okay, we're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Now, is there no greater example of this guy being a loon than that? Or, as it just occurred to me, was Paul Krugman suggesting that that the powers that be in office right now manufacture a crisis situation of such magnitude that would justify a massive amount of government spending? You know, it just occurred to me. Because, you know, Krugman is saying something that's really bizarre, that if space aliens came down, that it would unify the nation and the world, and we'd spend a lot of money to fight the aliens, and then government spending would be justified. The American people would go along with a massive amount of government intrusion, government spending. Remember World War II, as Krugman points out. Rationing went on. And it was widely accepted because there was a cause, one common cause that brought the people together. And so civil liberties were dispelled with in many cases. Habeas corpus was suspended on at least three occasions by the Roosevelt administration. So perhaps Krugman is really onto something. Perhaps calling him a nut job for assuming that his idea of space aliens coming down out of the heavens to help bring us all together and give impetus to a massive amount of government expense and intrusion into our lives, perhaps that's not so far-fetched. Think about it. Never let a good crisis go to waste. So perhaps what Krugman is calling for is a massive amount of government spending. But in order to get the people to go along with it, we need a crisis situation. We need a crisis situation of such magnitude that the American people will allow the government to have a blank check. Dare I say it, something similar occurred right after 9/11. A lot of us did not question having a lot of our liberties looked into or scrutinized or even in some cases taken away. Even now, I had a a deposit into my account in excess of $10,000 just last week. And immediately, within 6 hours of having those funds posted to my account was frozen. It was frozen by the bank because they wanted to know where this massive amount of money was coming from, which wasn't that much. It was slightly over $10,000. And so it took days for the bank to unfreeze my account because they wanted to verify that that money was coming into the account legally. This has never happened before. Usually what will occur is if you're putting an amount in over a certain amount at any one given time, that there's a form to be filled out. And the government has to be notified, and that's all, for tax reasons. But the legality was the undertone of the conversations I had with the bank were of the legality of a criminal nature, perhaps. I was deeply offended by it. But then I understood it to a certain extent. So, Krugman is probably on to something there, but this rant is amazing. It's worse than the death panel issue. Who is Paul Krugman? Who is he? He's a self-appointed financial genius who has, surprise, influenced much around President Obama. Now, one might think that he should be humbled when his financial policies have helped severely damage our great nation. But like many university professors on the left, logic and resulting math seems beneath this great man. Now, while I cannot find a reference that Krugman ever worked a day in the real world, he, of course, after getting his degree, wrote 20 books on how it should be run. Could that be the problem? People writing about things they never saw or did. Paul Krugman never had a real job working for anybody. There's some lines that no human being should cross. In my mind, he just crossed one of those lines. The man, I mean, if you can't do, you teach, you know, that kind of thing. I'm not sure this is a new low. It's pretty hard to measure when he has sunk to the depths that he has. What a mess. Paul Krugman, on 9/11, no less. I suppose we should all be shocked. Not this time. These words come to mind. And I quote, "You've done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir, at long last? Have you left no sense of decency?" End quote. And of course, we know that those memorable lines, that memorable retort to Senator Joseph McCarthy is most aptly asked of New York Times serious senior moron Colin Paul Krugman. He, of course, once suggested that Senator Joe Lieberman should be hung in effigy. a message to progressive, by all means, hang Senator Joe Lieberman in effigy. He declared that he's disappointed and disgusted with President Obama. He demanded a change in the Senate rules that, combined with the Republican strategy of total obstructionism in the process of making America ungovernable. He was compelled to clarify his Lieberman statement, which he did, in the most insincere and graceless manner possible. What happened after 9/11, what happened during 9/11, the way people came together, the way the government came together, the way Americans came together during the tragedy and the afterwards is honorable. The only thing I would have to say about this tragedy that I question, and I questioned it yesterday during my show when I played those clips of the controllers behaving in less than a intense manner, well, pretty much that's it. I believe that the controllers were lollygagging. They were not taking the situation very seriously. In fact, when I played the clip, those of you who heard my show yesterday heard one of the controllers, a female controller, say, "We have a hijacking. Oh, cool." And then another controller say, "Wow, we sure have a lot of real world events in a play act scenario," words to that effect. He didn't understand that this was not a game. This was not a drill. But other than that, honor was everywhere. Sacrifice everywhere. Paul Krugman should be ashamed of himself. Of that, there is no doubt. Krugman is a coward. I can't say any more than that. Enough about this clown. We'll be right back after this short break. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There are so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Roark from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it? And I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged, the corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spreads socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He is Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of the Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how.
President Obama visited Ground Zero Thursday to lay a wreath and visit with victims of the 9/11 attack. It was a quiet bookend to the visit 10 years ago by his predecessor, George W. Bush, who promised to bring those who planned the attack on the World Trade Center to justice.
I want you all to know that America today is on bended knee in prayer for the people whose lives were lost here, for the workers who work here, for the families who mourn. This nation stands with the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you. I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Oh, yeah. President Bush speaking without a teleprompter. What I dug most about yesterday, well, what I noted most about yesterday was that speaker after speaker got up to the podium to speak, and there were the two teleprompter panels that could be seen when there was a wide shot of the speakers. And with each speaker, the teleprompters went unused. Bill Clinton spoke from a few notes. He looked down just a few times at his notes as he spoke. Why? Because he spoke from the heart. Joe Biden, even dumber than my dog, Nick, my Rottweiler. My Rottweiler is smarter than Joe Biden, no doubt. Did not even use a prompter. Why? Because even Joe Biden, as moronic and gaffe-prone as he is, well, even he's capable of speaking from the heart. No teleprompter needed. My main man, George W. Bush, spoke from the heart. No teleprompter needed. Look down in his notes just a few times. Rudy Giuliani, George Pataki, the current mayor of New York. Every speaker used no prompter. How do I know this? Well, I noticed the speakers looking down at their notes. I noticed that the speakers did not turn their head to the left, chin up, and then to the right, chin up, and then to the left, chin up, without ever looking straight ahead. I noticed that every speaker looked straight ahead, or even down at their notes briefly. But when President Obama got to the podium to speak, it was the ping pong man all over again. Left, right, left, right, chin up, chin up, chin up. If this guy is so brilliant, I'll ask one more time, then I won't ask again until December. If this guy is so brilliant, if he's such a great leader, if he's such this great man, why isn't he able to speak? Why doesn't he speak from the heart? Why doesn't he just stand up on a podium and give a speech or speak to us, the American people, from his heart, right off the top of his head. Why? Because he can't. It's not possible. But the man feels our pain. He feels our economic pain. And we know it because he was so sincere as he addressed Congress, a joint session last Thursday. Or at least he tried to sound sincere, didn't he? The problem is that Obama struggles to come off empathetic due to his inherently professional speaking style as a result of that damn prompter. You put a prompter in front of my dog and he can read that, sure. And sound professional doing it, I suppose. To make up for the shortcoming of sounding like you give a damn, Obama often employs a sort of out loud whisper to give the impression of intense emotion while still speaking quietly. And on Thursday, the president sought a doubtly empathetic tone. But what resulted was speaking that sounded like an awkward cross between a grunt and a whisper. It was awful. I can barely get through any of his speeches. And Obama has a reputation as something of a gifted speaker. Just ask him. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid told a story of how, after an Obama speech, Reid told the future president that speech was phenomenal, Barack, end quote. Quote, that speech was phenomenal, Barack, end quote. According to Reid, a humble Obama replied, "I have a gift, Harry." Apparently, Senator Reid understands the word humble a bit differently from the rest of us. What does he have a gift in doing? Reading from a teleprompter and sounding as if he cares, just barely? What gift is that? A gift is when you can speak, in my mind, in front of a crowd of people from your heart and convince us that you mean what you say, that there's a conviction in your heart because you're telling us what you think, not from prepared notes. Think of one of the greatest speeches of all time, the Gettysburg Address, written by Abraham Lincoln himself, delivered without looking down at the paper he wrote it on. Sure, it was just a few sentences. But think of all the men who gave speeches without looking at prepared remarks. Think of the famous inaugural address given by John F. Kennedy. Teleprompters weren't there. They weren't even invented in a way that could be used on that day. No, President Kennedy had a few handwritten notes. That was it. And he spoke. Back then, those really smart orators actually sat down and memorized their speeches. They knew what they were going to say before stepping to the podium, and they said it. But others see Obama's so-called gift, including Peggy Noonan of the Wall Street Journal, Karen Bohan of Reuters, Peter Baker of the New York Times, and many, many others. Most arrived at this conclusion after Obama's 2004 Democratic National Convention speech or early 2008 presidential campaign. It's important to note that in both 04 and 08, Obama gave only one type of speech, a large audience, thunderous rah-rah speech. Obama's speechifying has led many to dub him the Democrat version of Ronald Reagan. But in fairness, the two presidents bear little oratorical try saying that three times fast similarity. Unlike the one-trick Obama, Reagan had a full quiver of rhetorical and statistical arrows, stylistic as well. Reagan's abilities as a speaker ran the gamut, from the political power speech, such as his pro-Barry Goldwater Time for Choosing, to the sensitive eulogy of the Oval Office address following the tragedy of the space shuttle, Challenger. The Gipper was also a great storyteller and masterfully used humor to put his audience at ease and playfully jab at his adversaries. By contrast, Obama, once President Obama, goes beyond the stadium arena or public mall, he's a fish out of water. Obama's humor, for example, is confined to sarcastic, at times bitter, remarks about his political opponents. Example, quote, leaders of the Republican Party, end quote, began the president just days after passing Obamacare. Quote, they called the passage of this bill Armageddon, end of freedom as we know it. So after I signed the bill, I looked around to see if there were any asteroids falling or sudden cracks opening up in the earth. Oh, that's funny. Compare Obama's self-aggrandizing sarcasm, lack of wit, lack of real intellect to this Reagan quip, which he made directly to my main man, Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev. Here it goes. I love it. He said an American and a Russian were arguing about their two countries. The American said, look, in my country, I can walk to the Oval Office. I can pound the president's desk and say, Mr. President, I don't like the way you're running our country. And the Russian said, I can do that. The American said, you can? He says, yes, I can go to the Kremlin, to the General Secretary's office, pound his desk and say, Mr. General Secretary, I don't like the way President Reagan's running his country. Oh, man, that gets me every time. Notice the subtle rhetorical brilliance of this sort of anecdote. In the joke, the Russian wins the argument. Both characters put Reagan in a negative light, and neither speak ill of the Russian premier. All the while of advocacy for freedom of expression is very clear. Barack Obama can't do that. He doesn't have it. He doesn't have it. It reminds me of a story where Muhammad Ali was asked how far he thought Mike Tyson would go as the youngest heavyweight champion in the world, just after Tyson became heavyweight champion. Muhammad Ali whispered, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have it. We barely understood what Ali meant by that at that time. But now we do. We understand fully now what Muhammad Ali meant when he said that Tyson didn't have it. Just after Tyson won the heavyweight championship of the world, some thought it was sour grapes. Some thought Obama was being dismissive of the new champion. But he knew. He knew. And fast forward to now. Ronald Reagan had it. We can see that Obama doesn't have it. Even Sarah Palin, giving a speech at the Republican National Convention just 3.5 years ago, teleprompter crapped out. We didn't know that the teleprompter had crapped out until well after her speech. She did not miss a beat. She ad-libbed, told a joke about lipstick on a pig, and then when the prompter kicked back in, she didn't miss a beat. And folks say that she's dumb. Meanwhile, contrast that with just a couple of weeks ago when Obama's prompter hadn't kicked in and he was standing in front of the podium, deadpan, silence, just stood there. The prompter hadn't kicked in, and he said, we'll be getting together in just a minute. Just a minute. He tried stalling, but he didn't say anything. How many of us would have gotten up there and just told a joke or had a conversation with some of the folks in the audience? Or, you know, told Tom Brokaw or somebody they had an ugly tie. I don't even know if Tom Brokaw is still alive. But anyway, something like that. Just have a little conversation. Tell a joke. But he just stood there. Why? Because he doesn't have it. Without that prompter, the guy's an empty suit. He can barely string a sentence together unless he's got that prompter in front of him. And last Thursday, he attempted to get across to the American people that he was sincere. Obama is clearly no Reagan. In Reagan's farewell address, he accepted his role as the great communicator. But he maintained that the greatness lay in the principles of freedom rather than his personal style. In truth, it was both. He was a great orator who communicated great ideas, unlike me right now. Obama is the opposite on both accounts. A mostly below-average orator who communicates the tired ideas of failed states, past and present. How hard could it be for my main man, Tesler, Sarge, Pendleton Marine, Nat King, American citizen, to stand up in front of a podium and move your head from left and read to right and read to left and read to right and read again? Is this what we've come to? We assign the title great orator to a man who is reading from a teleprompter. Would one be considered a great orator if you sat and just read a book out loud? Wow, Dr. Jones is surely a great orator. Look at him reading that comic book. Wow, Captain America. He just brings Captain America to life. He brings the Avengers to life. And wow, doesn't Dr. Jones read Spider-Man action one. Wow, listen to the way he reads that. The guy is a gifted orator. How hard can it be? Don't we assign greatness and oratory skills for those who can actually speak from the heart? Take Benjamin Netanyahu, for example. Spoke in front of Congress, all of Congress, a joint session, with no prompter. Looked down at his notes a total of 11 times. I counted them. Why? Because he was speaking about something he believed in. He didn't need a teleprompter to tell him what to say or to guide him on how he feels or to guide him on the philosophy. He knew. It was in his head. It was in his heart. No prompter. No prompter yesterday. 9/11. Count them. George Bush, even that idiot Joe Biden, Bill Clinton, George Pataki, every single speaker who stepped to that podium spoke from the heart, spoke with just a few prepared notes and no prompter. But guess who did? I'll give you $10,000 if you can guess who did. Barack Hussein Obama. The prompter was rolling in the head from left to right. Oh, yeah. Was he speaking from the heart? Did he really believe it? Did he believe what he was saying? I don't think so. I don't think so. How could it be? We'll be right back after these brief messages. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Good morning, January 20th, 2017, the last day of Barack Obama's 8 years as president.
8 tough years for many as unemployment continues climbing.
With debt to China reaching record levels, some analysts believe the Chinese have overtaken the United States.
8 years ago, we were promised hope. Today, many believe their American dream has been lost.
The Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Guarantees are you going to give this liberal about how that will reduce the cost of gasoline at the pump if we let you drill where you say you want to drill?
I can guarantee to the American people, because of the inaction of the United States Congress, ever increasing prices unless the demand comes down, and the $5 will look like a very low price in the years to come if we are prohibited from finding new reserves, new opportunities to increase supplies.
And guess what this liberal would be all about? This liberal will be all about socializing, would be about basically taking over and the government running all of your companies.
Democrat Maxine Waters there looking for the...
John McCain has not talked about my Muslim faith.
Barack has led by example.
What we're listening to is Barack Hussein Obama.
His home country in Kenya.
Without the prompter.
Let me tell you something. For the first time in my adult lifetime, I'm really proud of my country.
And over the last 15 months, we've traveled to every corner of the United States. I've now been in 57 states. I think one left to go.
It was felt in the presence of relief workers and medics, translators, servicemen and women, bringing food and water and aid to the injured. One such translator was American of Haitian descent, representative of the extraordinary work that our men and women in uniform do all around the world, Navy Corpsman Christian Bouchard. And lying on a gurney aboard the USNS Comfort, a woman asked Christopher, "Where do you come from? What country?" "After my operation," she said, "I will pray for that country." And in Creole, Corpsman Bouchard responded, "En Tanzini, the United States of America."
Orion Energy Systems is a perfect example, which Neil Barefoot, did I say that, Neil, properly?
Sir.
That you right there? Okay. Neil just spoke to you about this. Orion employs more than 250 people providing energy-saving lighting to Fortune 500 companies. Everybody knows that it makes no sense that you send a kid to the emergency room for a treatable illness like asthma. They end up taking up a hospital bed. It costs, when if you they just gave you gave them treatment early, and they got some treatment.
Teleprompter craps out here.
A breathalyzer or an inhalator, not a breathalyzer. I haven't had much sleep in the last 48 hours, so.
This week there was a tragedy in Kansas. 10,000 people died. An entire town destroyed. I talk.
But the truth is that our challenge is to get people persuaded that we can make progress when there's no evidence of that in their daily lives. And you go into some of these small towns in Pennsylvania, like a lot of small towns in the Midwest. Yeah, the jobs have been gone now for 25 years and nothing's replaced it. And they've gone through the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, and each successive administration has said that somehow these communities are going to regenerate, and they have not. So it's not surprising then that they get better and they cling to guns or religion or antipathy towards people who aren't like them, or anti-immigrant sentiment, or anti-trade sentiment. A way to explain their frustrations. Now, these are in some communities. I think what you'll find is that people of every background, they're going to be a mix of people. You can go to the toughest neighborhood, working class, much pale folks, and you'll find Obama enthusiasts. And you can go into places where you think that I'd be very strong, and people will just be skeptical. The important thing is that you show up and you're doing what you're doing. So, you guys are just that kind of.
Okay, we're back. The Robert Jones Situation Report. Hey, most of the gaffes that you just heard there were either without a teleprompter or the prompter crapped out right in the middle of his speech. And he had no idea where to go. He had no idea what to say. He began to stutter and stammer and say really dumb things. Because he had no idea what to say. It's like the Wizard of Oz. Everybody's seen it. GGT's seen it. Tesla's seen it. American citizen, you've seen the Wizard of Oz. Pay no attention to what you see behind the curtain. Well, what we see behind the curtain is a stuttering moron, an empty suit, who can barely string a sentence together without the aid of a teleprompter. But yet, curiously, oddly, Obama has been given the title of a great communicator, a great orator, on the level of FDR, Lincoln, even my main man and yours, Ronald Wilson Reagan. What the hell? And all I can think of at this time is Sarah Palin standing in front of a crowd of thousands during the Republican National Convention. Countless hundreds of thousands of people watching on television. Her prompter crapping out. And we didn't even know about it until after, because she was seamless and flawless. She told a joke about lipstick on a pig. We have a call on the line. Calling you on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Hello. Caller. Okay. I put my caller back on hold. No one was answering. I had a crank call yesterday. Listen to yesterday's show if you get a chance to hear just a little bit of it, where I have a Howard Stern type of crank call. I was called the N-word, and I was told to go back where I came from. I haven't heard that one ever. Can I tell you something right here and now? I have never, ever been called the N-word by a white person until yesterday. Never in my 49 years on this planet. And I can only assume that the person was white. It kind of sounded that way, I guess. I guess you can go by the sound of a person's voice. I've never been called that. Well, I mean, affectionately by, you know, black folks, because for some reason we have license to say that to each other, or at least we used to. But never in my 49 years on this planet have I ever been called the N-word by a white person until yesterday. On yesterday's show, a caller called in and told me to go back where I came from, N-word. Hell, I rarely use the N-word myself. I didn't use it just now. So I found that to be interesting. I managed to make it to 49 without ever hearing that coming from a Caucasian. I'm going to try my caller again. We've just got 2 minutes left. Well, we've got 2 minutes left, so I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get my caller on the line. Well, the show's just about over. I want to thank everybody for coming in. Tesla, GGT, American Citizen, Sarge, thank you for being here. Pendleton Marine, Net King, my main man, Beach Bum is in the house. Thank you all for being here. I'm sure that, like I always say, you guys, there are plenty of things you could be doing, but you came in to listen to the show, and I so appreciate it. Have a wonderful night. Monday Night Football tonight, I think. I'm turning on the TV. Good night, folks. Thank you for being here. God bless you. God bless the United States of America.
An airplane has hit the World Trade Center, and that's all we know.
Today, we've had a national tragedy. American Airlines Flight 11 departed Boston for Los Angeles. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center.
World Trade Center has been one of their missions.
We heard a big bang, and then we saw smoke coming out, and everybody started running out, and we saw the plane on the other side of the building, and there was smoke everywhere, and people were jumping out the window.
And now, if you join me in a moment of silence. Thank you very much. May God bless the victims, their families, and America.
Violence spread worldwide and their families on the street.
People are running their hair on fire. People are jumping out of the World Trade Center. Jumping out. They don't know what to do.
All we do is eliminate our future. Things we do today. Money is our invention now, though.
reported that my brother John was the captain of American Airlines Flight 11, which was hijacked out of Logan Airport. I keep looking at the cornfield behind me, hoping that my brother comes walking on out.
People were on those planes that just began their lives like children.
My children are like 5 and 8 years old. I think mommy's still at work. If anyone sees them, then please call us. Please look at the picture and call me. Thank you.
Walk blindly to the light and reach out for his hand. Don't ask any questions and don't try to understand. Open up your mind and then open up your heart. You see that you and me are very far apart. I believe that love is the answer. I believe that love will find a way.
Again, I want to let y'all know that I love you very, very much.